Welcome to the Sister Speak True Blood podcast, where we discuss everything about the HBO series True Blood from a sister's point of view. I'm Sister J.
And I'm Sister K. And welcome to episode 25. Let's get started.
Okay, I'm doing the recap for today. So y'all know it's going to be long.
Oh, Lord.
So all y'all that don't like it long, skip ahead. Anyway,
I just remembered I forgot to put the chapter markers on the last podcast.
Oh, well, they can skip ahead. I mean, you know, these are adults. They know how to do that.
I'll make sure and do it this time.
Okay, anyway. Okay, this is the True Blood episode 35 called Fresh Blood. Okay, we start out this episode at Fantasia. And, you know, Bill has used his vampire speed to feel that Sookie has been, yelling and screaming, Eric, in the she's locked up in the basement. So Bill goes into the club and he's looking for Sookie. And Pam comes out and him and Pam start fighting. Don't be hurting my Pam, Bill. Anyway, and Pam sprays this liquid silver into Bill's eyes. Yeah. Kind of blinds him momentarily. Then we have the commercial break. So when we come back, Bill is kicking Pam's butt. He is throwing her all around Fantasia. Yvetta, while Bill and Bill and Pam are fighting, then Yvetta goes to the basement and she unlocks Sookie from the chains in the basement. And so on the way upstairs, Sookie grabs a thick silver chain. And when she gets upstairs, of course, Pam and Bill are fighting. And Pam is on top of Bill, spraying all that spray in his face. Of course, Bill is screaming and hollering. So Sookie wraps that chain around Pam's neck. And, you know, Bill is able to toss her over. And he throws Pam all the way over by that stripper pole. You know, that stripper pole. Anyway, so Sookie demands to know. Oh, and then Yvetta is up there too. And she wraps that chain around Pam's neck. And wraps it kind of around the stripper pole and is holding Pam in place. So Sookie gets that little spray that Pam was spraying Bill's eyes with, and she demands to know, why Eric threw her in the basement, or she gonna spray Pam. And Pam tells her, well, you know, you were a gift to Russell Edgington. And that, you know, now that she's loose, everybody gonna die just because of some little human. So Sookie and Bill leave Fantasia. And Pam, as they're getting ready to leave, Pam yells to them not to leave her with this idiot immigrant. And Yvetta looks at her and says, idiot. And Talon, which is where she's from, I am a cardiologist. And she is sinking that chain into Pam's neck. So, poor Pam. Excuse me. Okay, the next scene, we're at Lafayette's house. And, of course, Lafayette, if you recall, Lafayette and Jesus have just come down from their little beehive. And Jesus is just amazed at the trip that he and Lafayette were on. And Lafayette tells him that, you know, he's been taken to some effed up places before, but not like today. And so Jesus tells him, look, you know, this is great. Let's do some more V. And Lafayette tells him, wait a minute. I don't think that's a good idea. And just when Lafayette is about to agree, he sees a vision of Jesus with a monster mask on. And I mean, that monster is, yeah, and it's sticking out his tongue at Lafayette. Of course, Lafayette recoils from Jesus, and Lafayette tells Jesus that sometimes with V, there are aftershocks. And so, because Jesus said, what's wrong, what's wrong? And Lafayette's just telling him nothing. So when Jesus suggested, well, okay, look, why don't we just go to bed? Lafayette doesn't, no, why don't you go home? And Jesus just looked, yeah, Jesus looked like, oh, okay, what, man? We don't have to do no B, you know? And so Lafayette says, let Lala need some rest. Why don't you go on home? And he tells him good night. So Jesus gets his little coat stuff, says, okay, good night. And he leaves. And Lafayette's just looking kind of worried, yeah, and kind of sad at the same time. Next, we're at Jason's house. And, of course, Jason is trying to understand what Crystal is telling him, that she's a werepanther. Whew, I hate this child. But anyway, she's trying to tell him that she's a werepanther. And then she's whining about how come Jason can't understand her. And Jason is trying to tell her, okay, look, I don't care about you being a werepanther. I've had a lot to deal with here lately. My sister's missing. I got chewed out by a vampire. And Crystal says, oh, poor you. I wanted to smack her. You know, that's what I wanted to do. But anyway. And she says, oh, poor you. All I have to do is breed with my half-brother until I'm old or dead. And so Jason tells her, look, I can't deal with this right now. I got to go find my sister. And he gets up to leave, and she's yelling at him, talking about, Jason, come back here. Of course, he goes on the leaves because, you know, Jason is his own man. Anyway, so next we are at Bill's house. And, of course, Jessica has taken Hoyt home with her over at Bill's. And they're sitting on the couch kissing. And Hoyt's telling him that, telling Jessica that he feels like he has muscles where he never had muscles before. Because if you recall, he drank Jessica's blood when he was bit by Tommy the Pitbull. And Jessica tells him that, okay, look, I got to tell you some stuff. Then you probably won't love me after that, but I killed a trucker. And he says, well, I'm sure you had to. And she says, well, I did kill him, but it was by accident. Because, you know, I drained him of his blood before I learned how to do it. I like human blood, and I'm going to continue to drink human blood. So, you know, that's just the way it is. And she says, but now I know how to do it. And so Hoyt is looking at her real intense-like, and he's considering what she said. And he says, well, and he unzips his little jacket, bares his little bare chest, and he says, well, drink me. And Jessica gives him this look like, ooh, yeah, you know. And so she kisses him on his stomach, and then she kind of kisses him, you know, going further up on his chest and everything, and the camera's like above them. And then she bites Hoyt on the neck, and she is drinking, and Hoyt is just holding on to her, you know, so that's kind of good. It was a good scene. I like that scene. Okay, next we find poor sweet, one of my favorite characters, King Russell Edgington. He is in a museum staring at a picture, and this picture is showing some kind of green scenery. And it's at nighttime, we see, and there's a guard, probably a security guard, dead on the floor. Well, he looks like he's dead on the floor. And while Russell is staring at this picture, then Eric walks into this hallway leading to the gallery where he's looking. And Russell tells him that, you know, Talbot adored that particular painting. And then he asks Eric, you know, why did you even kill Talbot? And Eric says, well, Talbot was the one person that Russell loved the most, so he had to die. And so Russell's looking at him like, I know it's going to be more than that. So Eric tells Russell that that 1,000 years ago, Russell sent his wolves after a Viking family, and he slaughtered all of them simply because Russell wanted his father's crown to add to his vast collection of meaningless shit. So Russell kind of looks at him and laughs and says, my, to lose the one that I love because you miss your mommy and daddy? And so, you know, Eric's kind of looking at him like, you know it's more than that. But anyway, so Russell says, okay, it's time to get this over with. And he puts down his little Talbot remains, the candy jar with Talbot's remains. And he says, okay, let's get this over with. He's getting ready to kill Eric. And Eric says, well, now, wait a minute. You know what? He says, I know that you want all this power and everything, but I have a way for you to get it. And I know that there's a way for you to be able to walk in the daylight. And Russell kind of looks at him and says, I'm intrigued. He says, you know, that's every vampire's dream for thousands of years. And Eric tells him, well, but there's been some new advances and he knows a way to accomplish it now. So he tells Russell, okay, look, what you got to lose? You can always kill me tomorrow. And so Russell is kind of thinking about it. And he says, I'm intrigued. And right then, Eric's cell phone rings with the tune, Ain't We Got Fun. You know that, yeah. In the morning and evening, ain't we got fun? Oh, it's hilarious, I think. And Russell's just looking at him like, And so Eric answers his cell phone, of course, and he's getting ready to tell Pam, now is not the time. And Pam tells him, Bill and Sookie have escaped, and Yvette cleaned out the cache. So next we are flashed over to Fantasia, and we see Ginger, the waitress, removing these silver chains from Pam's legs, and Pam saying, ouch, you know. And so Ginger says, well, you know, they really had these embedded in you. So we know that Yvetta really slapped them chains on a Pam, and then she probably left, see, after getting all the cash out of the safe and everything. And so Pam, once all the silver chains are off her, Ginger stands up and says, okay, now, you know, can I get you anything? Is there anything you need? And Pam says, I need a drink. And she snatches Ginger and bites her on the neck. Ooh, Lord. Poor Ginger. Okay, the next scene we have, we're on the road with Bill and Sookie driving in the car. Oh, Lord, have mercy. And Bill is asking Sookie why she even went to Eric in the first place. And Sookie said, well, you know, she had to ask Eric a question. But I noticed she don't tell Bill what the question was that she wanted to ask. She ain't that stupid. Anyway, so Bill's sitting there kind of complaining that Eric has used her and lied to her and put her in danger. And Sookie looks at Bill as if to say, ain't you done that same shit to me? Anyway, so Bill's kind of looking kind of sheepy like, oh, okay. Then Bill says, he has done that. And Sookie admits that she has different feelings for Eric after witnessing him with Godric. Because Bill's trying to say, you know, she cares for Eric. And she says, well, you know, I don't feel for him like I feel about you, but I did drink his blood. And, you know, we talked last episode about that blood issue. And yeah, we'll get into that again. But she says, you know, but after seeing him with Godric, she says, you weren't on the roof with Godric. But after seeing Eric with Godric, I saw a whole new side of Eric. So, you know, and Bill seems real peeved. He's kind of pissed. And then Bill and Sookie talk about, you know, when this is over, they can begin all over again. Bullshit. Anyway, then we have a little quick scene with Tara at the cemetery, and she's sobbing over Egg's gravesite. Get a grip, Tara. Anyway, so she's there in the dark at night, alone, in the cemetery, crying over this grave. Next, we find ourselves at Merlot's, and Holly, you know, the new waitress that's a Wiccan, she's asking Arlene if she is sure that she wants to get rid of this baby. And Arlene says, I am sure. So they agree to meet after work to conduct this special ritual that Holly's going to do. Well, about that time, as we know, we left Sam in the previous episode out in the woods drinking whiskey, reminiscing about when he killed them two folks out in the woods because they stole from him. So Sam comes into Merlot's and he is drunk and he bumps into this waiter and he's the one that bumped into this waiter and then Sam starts cussing the little waiter out. Everybody's kind of looking at him and then Sam tries to find a whiskey bottle and he's yelling at people to give him back his whiskey. Then Terry comes out from the kitchen and he tries to tell Sam, okay, look, Sam, just calm down. And Sam tells Terry to kiss his ass and to get back in the kitchen, you shell-shocked motherfucker. Oh, poor Terry looks so hurt. He says, okay, I know it. That's the liquor talking, you know. But Terry looks so hurt. I wanted to smack Sam myself. Anyway, so Terry walks on away. Arlene comes up to Sam and she is fussing at him. She's saying, you apologize to Terry. He is nothing but loyal to you. He loves you. He looks up to you. And Sam tells her, bullshit, I don't care. That's his problem. You need to get on back to work. And Arlene is trying to tell him, look, you can't just be yelling and saying stuff to everybody. And Holly comes up behind Arlene and she says something about, look, you know, you're going to have to calm down because you are upsetting the customers and they're not leaving us no tips. Sam says, wait a minute. Y'all working for me and you bitches do your job and shut the fuck up. Oh, hell no. Holly says, you know what? I don't take no talk like that. You wait your own damn tables. And she put her little apron up and her little book down. And she said, come on, Arlene. And so they got ready to leave. Holly says, grab the salt. And Arlene's saying, well, how come? She says, I left mine at home. So, you know, they're going to use salt in the ritual. Anyway, so they leave Merlot. So there Sam is. He going to have to wait his own tables. So then we see Jason inside his truck. And, you know, he's supposed to be looking for Sookie, but he's parked outside the high school stadium. You know, probably reminiscing. And he's trying to call Sookie on his cell phone. And, of course, he's getting her recording. So, you know, of course he can't reach her. Then he hears someone calling out drills and saying, you know, back up and get this and run and this. And he walks over to the field and he sees Kitch, you know, that little high school boy, throwing a football to his teammates. And Jason's looking at him and he's recognizing that Kitch is probably high on some V because he's throwing that ball way over. The next scene, it's one of my favorite scenes in the whole episode. We are at Maxine Fortenberry's house. Where is Maxine been? Anyway, that's Hoyt's mama. And Summer comes knocking on the door late at night. And Maxine answers the door and she's asking her, what are you doing here at this time of night? And of course, Summer is crying and everything. And she says, it didn't work, Mrs. Fortenberry. So Summer is telling Maxine that she even offered Hoyt her virginity and he turned her down flat. And Maxine digs a handkerchief out of her bra and hands it to Summer saying, oh, honey. She says, oh, honey, I appreciate that. Even if you did break God's law. I said, Lord. So Summer cried and she says that she knows that she's not as pretty as Jessica. And Maxine's telling her, oh, that's a lie. You're as cute as a pig. She said, you're as cute as pigs. What the hell? Anyway, then Maxine tells Summer that she is not to blame because that redheaded bloodsucker has put a spell on Hoyt. And Maxine tells Summer to not give up. She says, because we are not finished, not by a long shot. So, you know, she's going to be doing some stuff. We're back at Merlot's, and Tara is back from the cemetery, and she comes in, and Sam tells her, oh, great, you can see I need some help, and she says, yeah, good thing I'm not working tonight, and she's looking around, and I think she's looking for Andy. She spots Andy, and she goes over to the booth where Andy is sitting, and she asks Andy if he minds if she sit down, and of course, Andy says, yeah, go ahead, and he invites her to sit. And Tara just stares at Andy. So, you know, Andy's just babbling on, you know, about, you know, how she doing and this and that and the other. And finally, when Andy is looking at his glass and he says, well, I need a refill. And he gets ready to get up. Then Tara says, I know about eggs. And then she accuses Andy of lying about shooting eggs because she knows that Jason shot eggs and Andy covered it up. And she's, you know, accusing him being a dirty cop and stuff. And then so Andy begins to kind of tear up a little bit. And he tells her that he did not intend for eggs to die, that it was all Marianne, and that eggs was just an innocent person. But eggs had that knife, and he was determined to die. And Jason didn't even know that eggs was wanting to die and wasn't really going to stab Andy. He was just wanting to die. And so Tara, by the way she's looking at Andy, you know that she recognizes that Jason did not even know that eggs was trying to kill himself and not Andy. So she kind of put that together in her mind. So next, we're still at Merlot's, and Sam's walking toward the back, and Sam's telling Tommy that he needs to take some orders. So he gives him one of those little order ticket things. And Tommy balks and throws his little order tickets on the floor and says, I'm not no waitress. I'm not doing that. And Sam says, oh, yes, you will. So when Tommy still refuses to write up tickets for the order, Sam explodes. And he tells him, look, he is sick and tired of his little whiny ass. He says, and a matter of fact, you are fired. And I want you to clear out of my rental. Ooh, Tommy says, well, wait a minute. I'm not mad anymore. Like he had a right to be mad in the first place. He said, I'm not mad anymore. I'll do it. And Sam is going on. And so Tommy says, well, look, you're the only person I know here. I got nowhere to go. And Sam says, I don't care. You got to go. So Tommy says, where am I supposed to go? And Sam just says, you know what? Clear out your stuff. You got to go. Then Sam goes through the restaurant and he says, matter of fact, Everybody get out. Everybody get out. So he is yelling at all the customers to get up and leave. So, of course, they getting up and going, you know. And Tara is sitting at the bar throwing back some shots. And Sam's looking at her and he says, I said everybody go away. And Tara looks up at him and says, no. And she keeps right on drinking. Sam just kind of looks at her and walks on away because I guess he knows all right now. Excuse me. I better not be messing with no Tara because she mean like me. Anyway, next we're back at a scene in Sookie's car. Oh, man. Now, the end of the scene is the best scene, but we got to make it through this other bullshit first. Bill and Sookie are talking about when they are free from all this craziness. And then Bill and Sookie start to fantasize and pretend what they're going to do when all of this craziness that Bill has brought to her, actually, is over with. And so Sookie says she'll be a real estate agent. And Bill says that he's going to be a third grade teacher and he loves his job. Mm. And they say who their friends are going to be and what they're going to do and that they won't even know anyone named Eric Northman. Mm. All of a sudden, Eric and Russell appear right in the road. And Sookie, of course, stomps on the brakes. Russell puts his hands on the car's hood, and it tips all the way up, but it doesn't roll over. And they just staring at Russell and Eric. Oh, it's a great, the end part was a great scene. Next, we find ourselves in the woods, deep in the woods, and Holly is doing her ritual for Arlene. Holly is drawing a circle with the container of salt, and she says it's for protection and purity. And Holly invokes the Great Mother and tells Arlene that her mother, her own mother, hated her, and that's why she went looking for the real thing, meaning, you know, the Great Spirit Mother. Arlene says that her mother did not approve of her, but they were close. Mm-hmm. So Holly tells Arlene that she will give her a decoction, and which is a herbal tea that she'll need to mix and use exactly as instructed. So Holly tells Arlene that while she's mixing this up, she needs to talk to the Mother Spirit, but do not step outside that circle. So Arlene is saying this prayer to the Great Mother Spirit and her own mother. And she's telling, you know, the spirit that she doesn't believe in abortion, but she got to do something about this baby. This baby is evil, and she does not want to bring evilness into the world. About that time, then Holly tells Arlene that the herbal tea is ready, but it needs a drop of her blood the very first time you take it. So Holly has this big old knife, and she cuts the edge of Arlene's finger and drops some drops of blood in there. And then when Arlene asks her why, Holly says, sacrifice. Nothing's free. I like that line, though. I like the way that Holly talks. Anyway, so she also tells Arlene that if the spirit is meant to be born, it will be born, and there's nothing they can do about it. Arlene drinks the tea. She just downs it all in one big gulp. Mm. Now we're back at the high school, and Jason is, you know, talking to Kitch, and he's telling him that he knows he's on B, that V is illegal, and that he should want to do things as a normal person for his team and not be hyped up on V. And Kitch is looking at him laughing, saying, my coach gave me the V, and my parents pay for it, and my principal uses V for his sex life. So everybody uses V, so what you gonna do? And so Kitch says, I'm not worried about doing things naturally for my team. He says there's going to be a scout from LSU coming just specifically to see me at the game this weekend to hand me a scholarship. So Jason is kind of, you know, his jaws is getting kind of tight. I guess he's jealous of the kid. I don't know. But anyway, Jason needs to go home. Next, we're at Lafayette's house, and Lafayette is asleep, but he wakes up when he hears voices calling his name. So Lafayette gets up out of the bed, and when he goes into the living room, all those little figurines that he has on his mantle, they're all shaking and dancing and calling his name. Mm, freaky. And they telling him, come with us. We need you. Come with us. We need you. Then that voodoo type doll that Jesus's grandfather was sticking pins in during their little he starts calling Lafayette's name, but his voice is getting deeper and deeper and louder as he's calling Lafayette. Oh, it was freaky. Lafayette was freaking out. Now we're back at Fantasia, and you know, King Russell has made a Sookie drive to Fantasia, of course. And when we're at Fantasia, it's at night, but we see the outside of Fantasia has all this graffiti sprayed on it. You know, with all these hateful messages like burn in hell and die fangers and all that stuff. Because, you know, the people are running amok ever since King Russell killed that newscaster on TV. So when Russell takes Sookie out of the car, then Eric whispers to Bill, "Hit me." And Bill's kind of looking at him. He said, okay. So Bill hits Eric and they start fighting. And King Russell kind of looks over to them and laughs. And he marches Sookie on into Fantasia. And, you know, Russell and Eric are fighting back and forth. And as soon as King Russell goes inside, both Eric and Bill stop fighting. And Eric looks at Bill and he says, "I have a plan." And, of course, Bill says, "Will it save Sookie?" Yeah, well, okay. Anyway. So then we're inside Merlot's. Everybody has gone. Nobody's there but Sam and Tara, and they're drinking shots at the bar. And they're both, you know, kind of feeling sorry for themselves and lamenting how they each are not very well liked in the town. And Tara tells Sam, "Well, but at least you got friends before you, like, fussed them all out this evening." And Sam says, "They only have... are nice to me because they think he's nice and he's a pushover." He says every little shitty job that people want, that, "Oh yeah, let's get Sam to do it. He's so nice, he'll do it, you know." And Tara says, "Well, it's better than no one thinking that she's nice at all." And then she goes through and says, you know, people say put away the wedding china. Tara's coming over. Poor Tara. And then Sam says, "You know what? We are not too different at all." And he's getting real close to Tara's face, and Tara says, "No, we're not." And then Sam says to Tara, "You feel like dropping by my nasty ass trailer?" That was so funny. He says, "You feel like dropping by my nasty ass trailer?" And Tara says, "Yes," and they kiss. The next time we see them, they are both butt booty naked and having sex in Sam's trailer. And we see the three green lights on that little alarm strip that Sam has right by his bed that shows when somebody's breaking into Malotte's safe and everything. And then we get, but Sam, of course, is having sex with Tara, so he's too busy to even notice it. But then we see that Tommy has cut the alarm wires to the safe, and he is opening the safe. He gonna clean him out. Next morning, we are at Arlene's house, in the rental house. But what we first see is this scenery with Arlene fishing on the banks of a lake. And we hear her mother in the background calling her name and asking her where she is. And Arlene keeps saying, "I'm right here, Mama. I'm fishing." And her mother's telling her in this voice, "Come on, Arlene, put away that fishing pole and come on. We're waiting on you." And Arlene says, "You know, I'll come home in a little while." And then we hear someone's calling her name over and over, like her mother calling her name over and over and over. And then it kind of morphs into a man's voice. And we realize then that Arlene is dreaming. We knew she was dreaming. And Terry is the one calling her name, trying to wake her up. And Arlene, when she wakes up, Terry's all frantic because she's bleeding all in the bed. And Terry wants to call 911. Arlene is just as calm, and she tells him, "Honey, no." She says, "We don't need 911. I'll clean myself up, and you drive me to the hospital. Go give me them pads in the bathroom over there." You know, she just is calm, and poor little Terry, he's just living. And so, you know, Terry begins to cry and say, "No, no, no," over and over again. And she's trying to, you know, console him because he's worried about, you know, losing the baby. Okay, the next scene, we're at Jason's house. And, of course, Jason has come back in to the house from looking for Sookie. And, you know, Crystal asks him, "Well, did he find his sister?" And, of course, Jason says no. And he tells Crystal that, you know, he doesn't care what she changes into. He doesn't want to break up with her because he loves her. And so she's very happy. And she tells him that, you know, she's happy that they're going to be together and everything, but she has got to go back to Hotshot and stop that police raid because all those innocent kids that live there. And Jason tries to tell her that, you know, he saw a kid there who was making awful noises and chewing on something dead. And she says, look, that's my double cousin Buford. That's my double cousin Buford. And he ain't right. She says, he ain't right, but he ain't never hurt nobody. Oh, Lord. So Jason's kind of protesting, saying, no, we're not going over there. She said, look, I'm going. And you can either come with me or not, but I'm going. Mm-hmm. So next, we're back at Fangtasia. And Russell is saying that he is not really sure that he's believing this little story about fairies actually exists. Because now Eric has told him, you know, Sookie's a fairy and blah, blah, blah. So Eric is trying to tell him, well, but Sookie is a fairy-human hybrid, which probably helps save her from detection from vampires. And Eric says that she may be Russell's only chance to walk in the sun. And Russell's kind of looking intrigued. And then Bill is kind of doing that little shifty, guilty look. And he says, yes, he says, Bill confirms that what Eric is saying is true. And Bill tells Russell that, he says, I have experienced walking in the daylight myself, but I can't force you to believe it. You will have to see for yourself. So Sookie asks Bill, why are you helping Eric? You know, and of course, Bill can't tell her the real reason. So he says, look, we have no choice. If Russell develops a taste for your blood, maybe he'll let you live. And he looks real earnest and everything. So King Russell's kind of looking at him like, yeah, see, he's telling her the right thing. So Russell seems really pleased by Bill's little plea to Sookie. And so Russell says, okay, he'll do it on one condition. That is if Eric goes first. And Eric says, I'd love to. Mm-hmm. So the next scene where they show us, we're at the hospital with Arlene and Terry. And Arlene's all, you know, tubed up in the hospital bed. And she's trying to console Terry. And, you know, telling him that, you know, it's just God's way that the baby was not meant to be. And Terry says that he should have been doing everything for her. And that way she wouldn't have, you know, lost the baby. And Terry's crying. And then the doctor comes in. And he tells Arlene, well, you know, you're going to need a few days of bed rest. But that, you know, you should be fine after a few days and that the baby is just fine. And Terry is jumping around the room, clapping in the background as the doctor is saying, yeah, you got a strong little critter in there. He cracks me up calling that baby a critter. And Arlene's just looking shocked that she's still pregnant, but she's just, oh, yay, that's great, you know. Mm-hmm. And Terry is in the background just strutting and clapping like he just won the lottery or something, you know. He is so cute. Next, we're back at Fangtasia, and it's morning now. Because, you know, we just saw Arlene, and it was morning. So, it's morning now, and Russell is talking with Sookie. And Eric is kind of in a back room talking with Sam. And with Pam. And Pam is questioning Eric about, you know, what if his plan doesn't work? And she doesn't want him to go out in the sunlight because she don't want him to be gone. And so Eric tells Pam that he loves her most when she is cold and heartless. And he kisses her on the forehead. And then he goes out to that main area and where Russell and Sookie are. And he says, okay, let's get it going. And when Eric comes out into that main area where Sookie is sitting at a table with King Russell and Bill is in a chair and he's got his hands chained behind him, we see the huge candy jar with Talbot's remains sitting on one of those bar tables right near Russell, one of those glass bar tables.
You don't want to be without his Talbot?
Oh, man, it's just too funny. So, anyway, so Bill warns them. He says, well, okay, but I warn you now, if you drain Sookie, then that's the last fairy blood that you'll ever have. And Russell says, ooh, we are schooled. Onward to adventure. So when Eric kind of hesitates, because he really doesn't want to bite Sookie, you know, and he kind of rubs her cheek. And when Eric kind of hesitates, Russell goes, oh, Lord. And he grabs Sookie's arm and starts feeding. And so then Eric drops his little fangs. He looks at Bill and he bites Sookie's neck and starts feeding. And of course, Sookie's screaming. And we see Bill sitting in the chair flinching, you know, but he knows it's got to be. Now, the very last scene of this episode is fantastic. We see, a few minutes later, Eric walking outside Fantasia. And, you know, Fantasia's like any other club where it's got that little canopy walkway.
Awning.
That little awning walkway. And so Eric is walking out there, and Russell is inside watching Eric on four monitor screens. And Eric is walking out in the daylight, and he's not burning. And he looks glorious, like, you know, that sunshine on his skin and everything. So he motions to the cameras for Russell to come out and join him. And then Eric turns his back to the cameras, and we see that he's beginning to sizzle. There's some little smoke coming up around his neck. And he says in his little Viking language, "Ooh, do not let them see me burn," you know, because he wants Russell to come on outside. Inside Fantasia, Russell is just giddy with excitement, and Pam encourages Russell, "Why wait any longer? You know, you need to go join Eric outside." So Russell reluctantly opens the door, and he squints and he steps outside. And inside Fantasia, then Bill is yelling to Pam to unchain him so he can feed Sookie, or she will die. But Pam is not paying him no attention.
She crying.
So meantime, when Russell finally walks outside and goes from under the canopy that's over that entrance, he is amazed that he can actually see the sun and feel it on his little skin. Then he notices that Eric's skin is burning, and Eric kind of turns to the side, and he's got these boils forming on his face and stuff where he's burning. Before Russell can say anything, Eric slaps silver handcuffs on Russell, and then he cuffs them to himself. And Eric says, "Be brave. We will die together." Typical Viking warrior. The end. Woo, that was good.
Woo, that was good. And you were kind of short.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yay, Sister J.
Oh, well, anyway. Okay, so what'd you think?
I thought it was a good episode, but not the best of the season, and
well, no,
of course there's a couple areas when I was like, oh, come on.
Okay, such as, wonder if it's the same areas I had problem with.
Okay, let's start with the King and Eric. I'm like, come on, Eric just had sex and staked his boyfriend, husband, lover, whatever he calls
that's his husband of 700 years,
right? And you gonna just let Eric talk you into some bullshit?
You know what?
I mean, he didn't even flinch. He's like, oh, well, at first he kind of was like, yeah, I'm going to kill you now, whatever. But he didn't even hesitate, really, when it came to talking about, okay, let's see what Eric's up to.
I thought it was the perfect response, and I'll tell you why. I didn't have a problem with that scene at all. As a matter of fact, I thought it was excellent written scene. And that's because a couple things. First off, Russell is gone mentally. He is just off the deep end with his little sorrow for Talbot. That's number one.
That's true.
Number two, Russell knows he can kill Eric at any time. He can kill any of those vampires at any time because he's 3,000 years old. No one is as strong as him. So, Eric told him exactly what was every vampire's dream. I don't care if you are 1 week old vampire or 3,000 year old vampire. And that is to walk in the daylight. And because if Eric probably would have said anything else, he would have just said, no, and cracked his neck. But he gave him that one little intrigue that he had yet to accomplish. And also, Russell already knew, he had already seen some of Sookie's power, so he already knew Sookie had something. You know what I'm saying? But he didn't know she was fairy until Eric told him, of course.
I get all that.
I did not have a problem with that at all. And especially when Eric says, okay, look, what have you got to lose? You can kill me tomorrow, which is true.
I get all that.
He can kill him tomorrow.
I get it. And it makes sense.
Oh, I like
it. But he just got done staking Talbot Tony's ass.
But
he... And he said, I should not have trusted him.
But the only reason Russell staked Tony is because he said he was saying goodbye to Talbot.
And as he said goodbye, he says, I'm sorry that you had to meet the true death alone. I'm sorry I wasn't there.
Exactly.
And I shouldn't have trusted him. It was all my fault. Meaning Eric.
Right.
So you mean to tell me he's going to turn right around the next day and trust his ass?
Yeah, because he's crazy.
I just felt like that was, well, yeah, that's probably how they're going to explain it, but I just felt like that was too big of a shift.
I didn't find it a shift at all. Not at all.
Especially when he just got burned.
And especially because of where they were. Where was he after he done staked that young boy, hallucinating that he was Talbot? He was in a museum looking at the pictures that Talbot liked to look at. Yeah. Oh, I didn't have a problem with it, but you know, if you did, well, that's fine. What was the other one? You said two. A couple.
F and Sookie and Bill.
I hate that car scene. I hate that little whole conversation in the car.
Conversation, argument, whatever the hell it is.
It was a conversation. It was so tedious. I was so angry after that whole scene that when Russell and Eric appeared on the road and Russell tipped that car up, I was hoping, yeah, reach in there and snatch their asses or do something, you know. I did like
the Pam and Bill fight scene.
Oh, man, and I was mad at Bill. He was kicking Pam's butt.
Well.
He was tough. And if she didn't have that spray.
That's why she had that spray. Yeah. She knew he's older.
Yeah. But he was beating up our Pam. Oh, no. I don't want Pam to be hurt.
Mm-mm-mm. And then I also liked Yvetta being upset and trying to help Sookie escape.
Mm-hmm.
But she got to know.
They're going to get her ass. Yeah.
Sooner or later.
They're going to get her. But yeah, I thought it was funny when she said, don't leave me here with this idiot immigrant. And she says, idiot? In Talon, wherever Talon is, I'm cardiologist. So here she is, a cardiologist, come to this country and got to be a stripper.
That happens a lot.
Yeah. Actually. But that's what I thought. I said, dang. And now she got to be a stripper, you know. Oh, Lord.
But the whole scene with Sookie and Bill talking, I was like, over that.
Yeah.
And every episode, they have to have somebody screaming now.
Yes.
It's kind of like their trademark, but it's getting annoying.
Yeah.
And so those were the couple of things that I really did not like.
Mm-hmm. I did not like. The things I did not like that whole Jason conversation at the high school with Kitch. He need to leave the kid alone.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't like that at all. Not at all.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah. That was just...
Well, I kind of...
To me. And my other scene was when he got back home and he's telling that trash child, I don't care what you shape into, you know, I don't want to break up, I love you. And she said, great. But now, you are with the girl from Hot Shot, and well, I got to go back there and help my people. And say, oh, please. Oh, I do not like
her.
Mm-mm. And so it makes it hard for me to watch the scenes that she's in.
She doesn't bother me.
Oh, I don't like that child. Something about her just grates on my nerve.
I mean, she's not the best, and I'd rather they have a different love interest for him.
Or maybe a different actor to play that part. I don't know.
I don't know.
But she just grates. Something about that individual just grates on my nerves. Anyway, but I didn't like that scene. But now, one of my favorite scenes, though, was Hoyt and Jessica. That was a very well done scene. They look so good together. And then I really like seeing Maxine Fortenberry. I don't know why, but I like that old woman. I like that old woman. And she has some good lines too. And then I really liked Lafayette's scene.
You're just jumping all over the place. We can't even talk about the scene.
Okay. Go ahead and talk about it.
Well, I was going to say, back to your original thing about the Kitch and Jason scene.
Oh.
It was kind of, I mean, the whole season he's been messing with this kid. Mm-hmm. On the basis of trying to be a cop and save society and all this crap. But it did kind of, I don't know what about it, but when he finally realized, he told Kitch, he's like, wait a minute, man, my record still stands and I did it the honest way. I did it my way without any help. You know, I like that comment, that line in there, but I don't understand why they're bringing that up.
I don't understand that whole storyline.
Yeah, I don't understand why we need to have Jason go back to his high school days and reminisce about his record. Unless they just wanted to remind us of how great of a star athlete he was. I mean, they could have done that in a different way. Yeah. They could have shown a bunch of trophies in his house or...
Well, the only thing I could think of is they're trying to set us up for next season because we're going to be seeing the principal and everybody else taking some B, and that's going to be causing some issues.
I guess.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah.
Because now that the only redeeming quality, in my opinion, of that whole scene was when Kit said... my coach gave me the V, my parents pay for it, and my principal takes V for his sex life.
Yeah.
See, so that's a whole lot of folk in that school who know about V. They know it's illegal, but they're doing it anyway. See, so that's the only thing I can think of is to impart that information for us to set us up later.
I don't know.
I guess.
That, to me, just, you're right. The whole storyline doesn't make sense. And it's only been, what, three scenes the whole season.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why we had to have that.
So that's the only thing I could think of. So I guess next season, then we'll know. You know.
And then him coming back to the house and getting into the argument with Crystal. I mean, I get it. He's like, well, hey, I don't care about them people.
Yeah.
They ain't my people.
Yeah.
And her trying to tell him, well, they ain't my people, even though they're wrong. Ooh, I want to F with them.
When that girl
said... My daddy done knocked my ass out. The fiance done put me in a black guy that still ain't gone away, which I think is strange, too, because if you're a shifter, you heal faster.
Well...
So, and her eye is still black.
Well...
So, anyway, that... Yeah.
I just think... I mean, the stuff they have this trashy girl saying... To me, it is a borderline stereotype. Oh, that boy was my double cousin Buford. I mean, don't that just sound like in Appalachia or something?
Well, but we already know they're inbred.
Yeah.
We already know that. So, I mean, they keep bringing it up, but they're trying to make a point.
I guess all of them shape to Panthers. Or do they shape to different stuff?
No, Panthers.
Oh, so all of them are Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder how all these white folk shift into a Black Panther.
You know what? I don't know.
I mean, I just find that hilarious.
Well, I mean, it does.
I didn't see no brown ones in the whole.
The only brown people that we see on the show are Lafayette, Tara, and Jesus.
And their parents. Yeah, their mamas.
Letty Mae and Ruby Jean.
And we did see some church folk last season, though. That church lady with the...
Oh, yeah. I don't understand why we haven't, except for the first season, we haven't seen a black vampire since.
Yep.
We haven't seen any black werewolves. Mm-mm. Well, that one guy at that bar that also...
Oh, yeah.
He's not a real character. And we haven't seen any black people in Hot Shot, although I think they're trying to make a point. Black people probably don't live in Hot Shot.
I think not.
But we haven't seen any other people of color besides our key characters, which I guess is, I don't know. They need to start incorporating that. And for that matter, we haven't seen any Asian ones.
Nope.
We haven't seen any Hispanic ones, have we?
We just got Jesus.
Right. And in the first season, Long Shadow, he's supposed to be Native American. Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yep.
And he died quick.
Mm-hmm. Staked him.
Yeah, staked his butt. Mm-hmm. So they need it. Season four, come on now.
Now, didn't they have some two in Dallas? Weren't some of them vamps... I can't remember.
No.
Yeah, I guess they weren't. Well, that woman was something. She was probably Latina.
She was Latina.
Yeah.
But, I mean, come on. She wasn't a main character either.
No, that's true. She wasn't.
Or someone that we saw more than, what, three episodes, four?
Yeah.
I'm just saying. But
yeah,
the things I did like about the episode, because I don't want to be totally negative about it, but it wasn't my most favorite of the season, actually. But I did, like you said, love Jessica and Hoyt.
Oh, yeah. They were just so cute. Now, and, you know, that was a really good scene to convey information. But that was a very sexy scene, especially with Jessica. And I like how they showed her from above, you know, from that above point of view. That was very well done.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm tired of them. Well, see, there I go. Sorry.
Okay. Get it out.
I'm tired, so I'm thinking of all the negative stuff. Sorry, y'all. I'm tired of these, okay, vampire-human story, but they always have to chomp on the human.
Yeah, that's what they do. They drink human blood.
But why you gotta chomp my ass?
Because he offered himself. He said, drink me.
I know, but they need to quit offering themselves.
Well, but he loves her. Yeah. I thought that was the best scene. One of the best scenes in the movie, because she was trying to give Hoyt all the information so he couldn't come back and say later, well, I didn't know, you know. She let him know, look, I killed a trucker. I mean, it was by accident, but I did it. But
now, I liked it.
Right. I liked it, and I can't drink that true blood. I drink human blood, and I like it, and I'm going to continue. However, I now know how to do it so I don't be killing folk. But this is who I am. And so he says, which I thought was perfect, because he loves her. Rather than her to go out there and try to, you know, chomp on some trucker again and stuff, drink me. I thought that was excellent. Because that's what they do. Every time Bill has sex with Sookie, he's chomping on her ass.
I know. I know.
And then he got the nerve to even complain and say anything about Eric. Of course, he's jealous of Eric, but still.
Right.
You know. I mean, come on now. Anyway.
But I
love that whole scene with Jessica and Hoyt.
I love, like you said, Maxine and Summer.
Oh, yeah. Maxine Fortenberry just cracks me up. She is cooking up some stuff, though.
Need to see her way before this episode.
I know.
It's been 11 episodes in. We're just now seeing her in this season.
Well, yeah, but that's okay. I mean, we know she's there. You know, because Hoyt done moved out and everything. But, I mean, we know she's still around, so. And if you think about it, though, I mean, Summer just, I like that scene because Summer just appeared. Now we know. No, that was Maxine's design. See?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Although I do think Summer likes him.
Oh, yeah. I think she does, too. But, I mean, that's because Mama done went to church or somewhere and said, oh, you know, my son is so, he would so love meeting you and, you know, whatever. She cooked it up. Lord have mercy. I like Maxine, though.
I do, too. And then I really, really like the scene with Lala and Jesus.
I know.
Sitting on the couch. Jesus, he done got a taste and he wants some more.
Oh, yeah.
Lafayette turned around and there's a devil face.
Devil face.
Looking at him. He's like, oh.
And sticking out his tongue.
Oh, okay.
You got to go.
I got to get ready. I got to wash my hair. I got to do some laundry.
You know what, though? That's us, though. See?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't care how much I might like you. Oh, no. You got to go. You got to get up out of here.
I see some freaky shit like that. You got to go. Sorry, baby. I'll call you tomorrow. Okay. I'll call you. Bye. See ya.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. That was a good scene, though.
And, that cracked me up.
You know what? We talked about this last time, too, that those two actors are so compatible with one another.
Yeah.
Lafayette, though, was so excellent in that scene because he was just getting ready to acquiesce and say, okay, boyfriend, you know, come on, we're going to do it. Do some more B meeting. And he went to turn toward him, and that's when he saw that image, see? And he completely changed.
Yeah.
Immediately like that.
Like, oh, shit.
It was, just like a real person would do.
We don't need to be rousing.
Mm-hmm. And he's really freaked with that. He was stone sleep, and them voices in there calling him. All them little figurines.
That cracks me up, those little figurines dancing.
Yeah, they calling him. Come with us. We need you. Yeah, what does that mean? Uh-huh. Yeah.
You might need to go see Ruby Jean.
I know. He better go.
So she could tell you some shit.
Because your mama know. Oh, that was good.
But, Oh, Tara, going to the gravesite. That was another one. I was like, come on. Hell, now we're... Y'all need to quit writing Tara into some bullshit.
Well, and then, you know, I didn't like this role for Tara at all this season. This episode. Okay, she gonna be crying over eggs. Well, first she gonna confront Andy, or think she gonna confront Andy, because she thinks she know. But then when she realizes, oh, eggs was trying to off himself, then, you know, she gonna go cry over him. Then she goes to Merlot's, sit there drinking, and ends up screwing Sam.
That's her defense mechanism.
That's her MO, though.
Well, that last part was true to her.
Yeah.
And a little bit true to Sam, too, because in the first season when they first hooked up, they did it because they're both pining for someone they couldn't have.
Yeah.
People who didn't want them. So they just said, well, hell, then let's hook up.
That is true.
You know, and her MO, we saw last week with Jason, is when things get too intense and things get too squirrely and I don't want to really think about it, her go-to, and also her with Franklin, when she first met Franklin, is to go screw somebody, get drunk, screw somebody, and try to forget about it. But of course, she doesn't feel any better the next day.
That's true.
And she hasn't learned how to quit doing that. And her and Sam fell back into the same pattern they had the first season.
Mm-hmm. And so that's
to me,
right.
She did
do the same behavior with Franklin before he kidnapped her and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was upset about eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you love eggs so much, you're going to go screw someone. But that's how she does
mm-hmm.
when she is trying to figure out how to deal with her
and
feelings.
She was drinking then, too.
Yeah. It's always when she's be drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and then Sam, he done went off left.
Oh, yeah.
He cussing everybody out at the stove, mm-hmm. at the restaurant.
Telling everybody to leave.
Off. Calling mm-hmm. people bitches.
I know.
I liked Holly. She's like, oh, you know what? Then she bust your own shit.
She took her apron.
Come on, Arlene.
She says, I don't have nobody speak to me that way.
Mm-hmm.
And she got her shit and left.
I love that.
Yeah, I did too. That was good.
Bitches. Okay. Oh. Uh-huh. Take my shit off.
But
okay.
You know what though? I really like Sam. I like the character, but I was mad when he
Ooh,
said what he said to Terry. Oh, I love Terry. He's so sweet.
Don't jack with my Terry.
I know.
Shell-shocked ass Terry.
He said, you shell-shocked motherfucker. Now, it is true.
It's funny, but...
He didn't have to say that mean to him like that.
And then I also love the scene with him and Tommy when he's telling Tommy to do the orders. And Tommy's like, I ain't doing that shit. I'm not no waitress. And he says, oh, okay. Well, I'm tired of your ass anyway. Get your shit out. Move out of my house.
He said, you fired and move out of my room.
And move out my stuff. Mm-hmm. And Tommy's like, oh, okay. Well, you know what? I'll go ahead and do all that order taking for you. And I'm not even mad. But we'll figure this out. Mm-hmm. Let me go ahead and take them orders. It was, that to me was so
that was
funny.
Uh-huh. Because he knew Sam was hot.
Well, I think Tommy's not used to someone standing up to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his mama, and he'll only go so far to argue with her because that's
mm-hmm.
his mama.
Mm-hmm.
Jolie was scared of his ass.
Yeah.
So he would jump back with Jolie and Jolie would back down.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't, and so that's why he's kind of gone hog ass wild the last
mm-hmm.
couple of episodes. He don't have nobody on his butt.
Mm-hmm.
Now Sam done went off left crazy.
Yep.
And Tommy think he can go all crazy with people. He went off on Hoyt last time, and so now he done got told he's trying to back down.
Mm-hmm.
Cause he knows Sam can knock his ass out.
Yeah, but he's stealing Sam's money. So you know what? But see, he don't know Sam's background. Sam gonna hunt your ass down and get his shit back.
Oh, we taking my money.
Oh.
Sam preoccupied. He ain't got time for all that.
Well, but you know what? That's only for the night. By Sunday, it's going to be daytime. And Sam going to be... He will have a hangover and a headache, but he going
to
be...
This brings me to my next thing. It's kind of off the topic, but we did have a listener write in about the alternate Tara.
Oh, yes.
And the alternate scene in the first season where Sookie throws
with the rat race.
Right. When she throws the neck of the chain and it wraps around Matt Rat Race's neck. So that was interesting to see. And there was a fairy in the woods kind of lurking, kind of doing some magic and making that thing tighten up. So that was kind of an interesting scene.
But I agree with the comments under that particular video. They should have left that on the cutting room floor too. Because that scene was much better without showing that.
Yes.
Yeah.
But watching the alternate girl who was supposed to play Tara.
Oh, hell no.
Was just made me appreciate Regina Wesley so
much. I know.
I already love Regina Wesley.
Yes.
But this was even. I was watching that thinking, okay, first of all, no.
We need to put that on our website so
somewhere,
people can.
Somewhere, yeah.
So people
or
can.
Or on Facebook or something.
Yeah.
But she, the girl, just didn't have the oomph.
Nope.
The passion.
Nope.
It was like she was just reciting lines.
She didn't have that swagger.
No.
You remember that scene? Okay. The video clip is of the scene where Tara is working in that little hardware store and she's...
The very first scene that we see Tara.
She's reading a book and this white woman comes in and she's asking for some help. And Tara's just telling her, we don't sell that. And the woman's saying, well, aren't you supposed to help me? And then Tara gets up and reads her, you know. This child, first of all, she had the wrong look.
Yes.
She had the wrong look. She had real fair skin. She is long and very slender, but she had a real long torso. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she had that kind of in between what we call semi-good hair. And she didn't have the right voice.
She just didn't have any oomph and passion in her.
No.
And I like the fact that, because a lot of these shows do this, which we haven't really talked a lot about this season.
No, we haven't.
On the real issues of that we usually talk about, which is race and stuff in TV.
But it's not necessary in this, though.
No, it's not necessary normally, but it's been coming, you know, more irritating as we go on now.
Yes.
Because it's been 3 seasons. Come on. We can add some more people. But anyway, besides the point. I love the fact that they chose a chocolate brown girl for Tara and a chocolate brown guy for Lafayette.
Yep.
And they mamas is chocolate brown and the church lady was chocolate brown.
And the preacher.
And the reverend was chocolate brown. I like that.
Yep.
Because in a lot of shows, they do not have the chocolate brown people.
Nope. They got real light-skinned
people. Fair-skinned people.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing against fair-skinned Black folks.
Well, let's hope not. Because you caught a high yellow.
I know you ain't called nobody high yellow.
I know. I'm kind of pale too. But
what I'm saying is on TV
and
in advertisements and in the media, whatever.
That's true.
They tend to always pick the lighter skinned people.
Yeah.
And I love, that's what I've loved about True Blood all these years.
Me too.
Is that they have integrated the cast and they don't mention it. They don't talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we know they're black, white, Hispanic, whatever, but it's not always talked about, mentioned. We don't have to actually say it and spell it out.
Yeah.
But the fact that they actually added some brown skinned people, I love that.
Yep.
And after watching that clip, I was thinking, oh my goodness, what if we would have had that girl playing Tara. It would have been, the show would not have been the same. That character would not have been the same.
And I don't believe it would have resonated with the public like it has either. No. She was very nondescript.
Yes.
She was, no offense to this particular actor, but she was generic looking for how Hollywood cast black people, which is just what you said.
Yep.
But she was generic looking. She had the fair skin, the long wavy hair, the leaner torso. You know, Regina Wesley is built.
Yes.
She is muscular.
And
she is built. She got a butt.
Watching
you know,
that scene.
I mean, yeah.
After seeing that clip and watching the scene with her and Sam, where you can, it was so, what's the word? Contrast.
Stark.
Yeah.
Cause woo, she chocolate and he is pale.
Pale.
His butt was white.
hell. And that starkness really illustrated what I liked about the cast and the scene and the season. So,
but to me, the same with Lafayette and Jesus, because Jesus is very fair, too.
Yes.
See? And they just blend so well together.
They're just too cute together.
But now, if Sam and Tara weren't so crazy, though, but they actually look good together, though. Mm-hmm. You know, they really do. And they understand each other. And both of them talk shit to each other. Yeah. But they understand each other.
And I love that scene when he's telling everybody, get the F out of her life. And he says, you too, Tara. Said, I ain't going nowhere.
And he just walk on away.
He's there like, whatever, I'm not fighting with her.
I know.
Because I won't win that one. So, I love that scene. Love that one.
Yeah, I do too. Oh, okay.
Oh, but, and we didn't talk about Arlene and Holly.
Yeah.
That's
going to be interesting.
I like Holly.
Yeah, I do too. But really Holly, like, you know, Holly told Sam, I'm a Wiccan, but I think there's more to Holly than that. Yeah. I think there's more.
Well.
Yeah, I think so. But I can't wait.
But
and I hope they show it too.
She said, now, if it's meant to be, it's meant to
be. Oh, yeah, I knew
it. If it want to be born, it's going to be born. I was like, oh, shit, here you go. Yeah. You know,
I want to see what Holly says when Arlene tells her, I bled out and everything, but the baby's still there. Because she's going to have to tell her. I mean, she will tell her.
Oh, yeah.
Because Holly indicated that there was more than one way to do it. There were several things that they could do. Now, that's the thing that she chose. But
she also told her, if it wants to be born, it's going to be born.
Well, now
so
that's
true. So I feel like she will maybe try one more thing or one more time. And if it's still there, she's going to be like, look, it's meant to be. You need to just let it go.
But that doctor cracks me up.
Yeah.
He has always referred to her.
Little critter.
Her pregnancy as the little critter. Ah, what are you trying to tell us?
She got a little critter in there.
And I just love that hospital scene too. And Terry. He is all excited, just stomping and clapping in the background. Oh, that was so cute.
Poor thing.
I know. Don't be mean to Terry.
But, okay, so then, even though I didn't like it, the scene with Eric going out into the sunlight.
Yeah.
And Russell.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my goodness, couldn't I think of a different plan? I mean, what kind of plan is that?
Well, okay, this is what I think. I don't really understand why they wrote it that way, because I'm not understanding why Russell could not get away from Eric and just go back into Fantasia.
Fly.
Yeah, or fly or something. Now, is it because of the interaction with the direct sunlight or something, or weakens him or something, or what?
I couldn't get that either, because when Russell was, when he first clamped handcuffs on him, he looked like he was trying to run. I would have thought he would have been fast enough to get away or move his arm.
So I think the sun weakens them.
And this is another thing. When Godric now, okay, they've had Sookie's blood, so that slows down the effects of the sun. But Godric burned up in 2.5 seconds.
Yeah, he burst into flames.
He was gone.
Yeah.
The sun came up. He was smoking.
But
he was gone in 2.5 seconds.
But like you explained, though, they've had fairy blood. So that's explainable.
So
that's why they're taking a while to burn.
Now, I will say, Bill, in the first season, when he was helping save her from Renee, it took him a while to burn up.
Yeah. And he kept going. He was charred.
But he had had some Sookie blood. We just didn't know at the time.
That's true. See, he had Sookie blood too.
But still.
So.
I just didn't want Eric to be burnt up.
I don't want Eric to be burnt.
And I really don't want Russell to be burnt up.
No,
I like
love Russell.
I like him.
He's crazy. And see, I don't know if we talked about this last time or not, but see, this is what I wanted to happen. I wanted the authority
yes,
to have some kind of input to help Eric kill Russell or to deal with him or exile him or something. Because just to have Nan Flanagan on TV explain it to the masses is one thing. But it seems to me that the authority, since the authority has only been around for 200 years and they know Russell is 3,000 years old, it seems to me that they would try to do some clandestine shit to to get him.
Well, first of all, they didn't know where he was at.
They know he gonna come after Eric.
Now, how did Eric find his ass so quick? I don't know.
That's a good question.
Yeah. How did Eric find his ass so fast? Who knows, except for the fact that Eric was with him and Talbot and kind of maybe heard what Talbot's into.
Yeah.
But he found him awful damn fast. And yeah. I agree with you. My thought of where they were going with this after he killed that reporter and everything is that they were building up a little AVL team, special forces team.
Yeah.
To come and try to get him. Mm-hmm. They were going to protect Eric, or maybe not protect him, but use Eric as bait to try to snatch him up.
Exactly.
And
something.
Use him as an example. But nothing.
Nothing.
They are gone.
I mean,
they have said, Eric, you on your own.
Now, that is what we call in writing a plot hole.
They would not have let that go. They would have said, look.
They shouldn't have let it go.
As she's talking about, he is not representing vampires.
Exactly.
He's just an extremist and a terrorist. We are going to mount up our own vampire resources like Myron always talks about how we need to have some kind of authority in the authority.
Yep.
They would not have let that shit pass. They would have used him as a prime example of what will happen to everyone so that other vampires don't get hinky acting and do the same thing. Maybe it's coming and we just had to go through this episode.
True.
It might be coming, but I feel like that was a hole.
It's a major drop.
Yeah.
I mean, to show us the authority of all the... We've heard this word authority since season one. And to show us this panel, we didn't see their faces, but we know that they're male and females. And this panel, we now know that they're only 200 years old and all this stuff. And then, boom, just drop it. Never to be heard from again.
And how did Andy have time to sit down at Merlot's and have an effing drink when it's mayhem out there? People are pissed. They just see a gosh damn vampire take the spine out of somebody on TV talking about we gonna eat your children and you. And you mean to tell me people are burning crosses and shit on lawns?
Yeah.
And Andy got time for a gosh darn hamburger?
And spraying graffiti on all the vampire places.
Yeah.
You know?
First of all, the real police would have been out there. You would have had some vampire police out there.
Good point. That's another hole.
Come on now.
Yep.
And people just going on about their day, eating at Merlot's, drinking beer and shit. What I'm seeing?
There
a
should have been some kind of semi-panic or something.
And Jessica is still working. And nobody but Arlene said nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Them rednecks would have come in there talking about, oh, hell no. She ain't sitting my ass.
She got to go.
She got to go. Although she wasn't working in this episode. But
still.
Last episode she was. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, was just off.
Yeah.
They're just trying. They're moving so quick through this thing that they're just leaving shit open.
That is a big problem. Yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know.
I don't know.
We'll have to see what the finale brings, but
hopefully the finale kind of touches on some of that.
That's a lot of stuff to plug up, though.
That's a lot of missing pieces.
Mm-hmm. Now, from what I can gather from the previews, they're going to show that hotshot shit.
Well, they got to.
The raid and hotshot, so I don't care about them damn people.
They have to. They done built that shit up. They got to show that now.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe somebody will shoot her then and she won't be on there anymore.
No.
Then Jason can grieve like Tara.
Yeah.
Ooh, Lord.
But I did like the episode, just not as much as all the rest.
Yeah.
That was actually probably my least favorite, but of course I still love the show.
Oh, yeah. I like the episode okay.
Love the show.
Okay.
Okay, well, we had some email.
Oh, good. Okay.
And the first one is from, she says, Sister K from Canada. Her name is I don't think I can say it.
What is it? It's probably
Killala.
It's probably Kalila.
Hey, Kalila.
Hey, Kalila.
Sorry.
That's a pretty name. I hope we're pronouncing it correctly.
By phonics.
Yeah.
Or hooked on phonics, whatever. Okay, she says, dear sisters, as the third season comes to a close, I want to thank you so much for brightening up some of the longest work weeks of my life. I'm working through my first trimester of pregnancy and have been nauseous for days on end.
Aww.
Luckily, finding your podcast has made me laugh so much I feel 100% when I listen, although my coworkers still look at me funny when I burst out laughing. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
On a little baby. Just some comments about episode 35.
Mm-hmm.
It seems the more danger Eric puts himself in, the more I like him. And the more Bill tries to evade and dodge the truth, the more he pisses me off.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, come on, Bill. The gig is up. And since Sookie has been acting so stupid lately, she'll probably forgive you.
Uh-huh.
Just like the last 100 times.
Yep.
The last 5 minutes when Eric goes out into the sun made me stop breathing. To do this for his family that died 1,000 years ago, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Alan Ball won't kill Eric.
He bet not.
And the previews were very discreet about this, but to wait 2 weeks to be proven right is going to drive me wild. I will miss you, sisters. Thanks again for the laugh. Sister K from Canada.
Thank you, Sister K from Canada. Oh, yeah, I don't think he's going to kill Bill off. I mean, Eric off.
No, he won't die, but he's going to be hurt for a little bit.
Yeah, he might be kind of crispy for a while. You know.
Crispy critter.
And we're glad we make you laugh. And you know what? You do have to kind of watch it, listen to us sometimes in your office, because I even burst out laughing too, because sometimes I listen to him back, you know, and I'll just crack up like, oh man, I can't believe we said that. So, but thank you for that email.
Yes, thank you, and we hope you get to feeling better soon, because there's nothing worse than being nauseous.
And now, we do have other podcasts too, so, you know, visit our website, even when True Blood's over, you can visit our website and maybe get some of our other podcasts, because, you know, those are fun to listen to too.
They are.
Especially the Big Brother ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, whatever.
Okay, our next email is from Myron.
Hey, Myron.
He says, sisters, I want to get into the show, but I have a bug up my hind parts I need to pop.
Uh-oh.
I have noticed how other people speak of Reverend Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson basically as ambulance chasers, salivating over the opportunity to make headlines in the paper or to get FaceTime on TV.
Mm-hmm.
How pejorative that is. I don't care if you are a southern or northern person unfamiliar with the struggle for civil rights. Black folks have had to shed blood to attain in this country, led by black preachers, I might add. Don't be deceived by the rhetoric of the political right and how they have demonized black preachers who give breath and voice to the injustices African American experience on a daily basis. Now, I'm not saying I agree with everything they say, but let's put things into perspective. If a synagogue or mosque is defaced and the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, or an imam speaks out against that act, no one will call into question the motives of Jewish or Muslim leadership. The black church has stood at the forefront in the struggle for black folks to be recognized as full-fledged citizens of these United States. We have earned the right to question and be critical of the shortcomings of this nation and its inability to live up to its creed. Steve Newland's character is more like Pat Robertson, Jack Baker, or Oral Roberts, but an Al Sharpton comparison misses the mark completely.
Well,
let's stop there before
well,
we goes on.
That's your opinion. See, that's your opinion. One of our listeners voiced an opinion that Steve Newland reminded her of Al Sharpton. And I like that characterization because I can see it.
Yes.
Because I don't have the same evidently, ideas that you have about Jesse and Al. Because I personally believe Jesse and Al are ambulance chasers and need to get a real job. You know? All this crapola that they speak when they could do so much for the black community, but yet and still, what they're about is aggrandizing themselves and making money for themselves. Why don't they Al Sharpton give all that money that his foundation is losing to those poor people who still live in the projects in Chicago or New York, you know, who don't have heat right this moment? That's my beef with them. So, yeah, in my opinion, both of those fools are ambulance chasers. They are out to aggrandize themselves. And although this is not a political show, but if you want to get into it, we can do it that way.
Sister J can get into it that way.
Because I read everything and I watch everything. And yeah, I don't believe the little black people hype about, oh, the right wing Republicans are just, ooh, the boogeyman. I don't believe that crap. Get off the plantation is what I tell black folk, you know? And I can tell you what the plantation is, but this is not a political show. So we'll get back to True Blood. Anyway, finish the thing.
I thought the comment was funny, but everybody has the right to their opinion.
Everybody has their own opinion. And if, you know, you didn't like that comparison, well, that's fine. That's a legitimate response. But I laughed. I thought it was funny, too.
Okay, he goes on to say, on to the show. My favorite lines. Pam to Bill, this is not just about your relationship, you infatuated tween. There's a bigger picture. Yvetta about Eric. Big, blonde, stupid, I hate. Pam about Yvetta. Don't leave me with this idiot immigrant. Yvetta. And Tylene, I am cardiologist.
Like that's right. Said. That's right. I thought that was hilarious, too. That
Russell to one. Eric. Eric, you are nothing more than a lump of muscle with a blood grudge. Yeah. You got lucky. You couldn't possibly comprehend what I'm after. Mm-hmm. This is a courageous show. Ball has confronted us with so many issues, it leaves me dizzy in keeping up sometimes. Mm-hmm. For example, we have seen families dealing with addiction, physical abuse from parent to child. Yep. Remember when Letty Mae went upside Terrace
head
with that liquor bottle last season?
Oh, yeah.
Issues of rape, incest, serial killing, interracial sex, gay lesbian sex, and the use of performance enhancing drugs in sports.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Was draining Sookie, luring Russell into the sun, and handcuffing him to Eric all a vampire Viking warrior strategist could come up with? Has Godric been doing all the thinking for Eric these past 1,000 years? Eric is as dumb as Jason, if you ask me.
I don't think so. No.
That's all he could think
you
of.
You agree?
He could have just lured him somewhere and had somebody stake him from behind or something.
But how you gonna
shoot him with an arrow?
But okay, don't you remember in Sookie's house? He is quick. How you gonna stake him from behind?
An arrow.
Oh well.
A la Blade or something, which I hate bringing up Blade, but yeah.
Oh Lord.
Something. When he was walking up on him in that museum, he could have did it then.
Russell knew he was there.
But he didn't move. He could have had an arrow in his
but
hand.
But he's faster than Eric. He's 3,000 years old.
An arrow. While his back was turned.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
When Lafayette turned his head and they showed Jesus with that damn mask on, I was not ready.
I know.
I jumped. Salima, my dog, jumped, and we both looked around for intruders. It scared me, too.
It was freaky. It was freaky.
I don't like freaky like that. I can't watch freaky
well,
like that.
Well, you know.
Anyway, he says, whoopee, we are about to get a break between Bill and Sookie. It's mm-hmm. about time. Mm-hmm. What part of the Fae being massacred by vampires does Sookie not comprehend?
Amen.
Once again, I will say, I don't care how good Eric looks in his blue sweater. They are monsters who need to be policed. Tommy is illiterate, which is why he responded the way he did to Sam, which, you know what? I was thinking that.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
When he was saying, I'm not going to do that. He looked uncomfortable, and I was thinking, what if he can't read or write? I ain't never been to school.
Man, I should have thought of that. But I bet you that is part of it.
We don't know, because they kind of glossed over that scene. Good catch, Mark.
That's a good catch.
He says, what the F is a brother cousin? Crystal doesn't owe her family shit if it means she has to sleep with her brother to perpetuate the were-panther bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
Well, brother cousin is when He's your brother and your cousin.
Hello. But she said double cousin. He's my double cousin.
Oh, I thought she said...
No.
Okay.
Double.
Yeah, double cousin.
Double cousin.
Well, even... But they've said brother cousins before on there. I will ride this train of season three to its destination with both of you sisters. Onward to the season finale.
Yes, Lord.
Thanks once again for the best podcast I have come across about True Blood.
Thank you, Myron, for that email.
Yes, thank you, Myron, for that email and all the emails that you've sent us. And Myron was the one that sent me the link to the YouTube video for the alternate.
Oh, yeah.
And
we need to post that on our website or something.
I'll post that somewhere.
Because people need to see it so they can really appreciate Rutina Wesley.
Yes, appreciate. Okay, our next email is from Phyllis.
Hey, Phyllis.
She says, hey, ladies, it's... Oh, Lord.
What?
I think this is the woman that sent us the voicemail about the cat.
Oh, you mean peekaboo cat or kid cat or something? Oh, she gonna tell us her name now.
I'm sorry, Phyllis.
I'm sorry, Phyllis, but we appreciate you at least telling us your name. Okay, wait. We gonna quit laughing. Okay, come on. We gonna quit laughing. Oh, Lord.
I'm sorry, Phyllis. Oh, Lord. If this isn't you, then I'm sorry.
Quit laughing so I can quit laughing. Okay.
I'm sorry. I didn't have a chance today to read through all the emails before we read them on the air, so this is why it's cracking me up.
Okay, okay.
She says, hey, ladies, it's Paco the Cat.
Oh, yeah! Paco the Cat! I remember now! I'm sorry, because we was all wondering, who's Paco the Cat?
We were trying to figure out, what kind of name is that?
Yeah, okay.
Okay,
thanks,
Paco
Phyllis.
Paco the Cat.
Sorry,
and
Phyllis.
And the way she spells it is cracking me up.
What?
Paco the...
Okay. That's cute. That's really cute, though. Oh, man, I got my ab exercise for today.
I'm sorry, Paco the Cat, Phyllis.
Oh, that's cute, though. I like the way you spell that.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Lord.
I think I must be tired this week. Oh, that was funny. Oh, okay.
Okay.
She says, I'm not going to complain that you guys took forever to put out your podcast for I Smell a Rat. And I was going through V-drug, like withdrawals, waiting for you ladies to talk about my favorite show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say a word. She just did. Let me say first that I love Tara and Jason's relationship. It's so rooted and grounded in their childhood.
Yep.
Tara will always see Jason as some sort of white knight.
Yep.
There to save her, and that's to both of their detriment. That is why in the next episode, Tara went after Andy and not Jason. She can never hate Jason.
That's true.
I hate when fans get annoyed with more supernatural soups. I think the more the merrier.
Me too.
It would explain why anyone with half a brain would stay in Bon Temp with the crazy, scary stuff going on. It would definitely explain why someone like Lafayette, who has the personality of someone who would get the F out of Dodge the first chance he got, even if it was just to a larger city in Louisiana, would stick around. I did have problems with seeing Lala Jesus being intimate at first, but I love the two of them now, or I love Lala in love. He is so sweet.
I know.
We know now that Jesus is probably practicing black magic because, or dark magic, because Lafayette is now seeing him as his true self. I think that trip they went on unlocked the seer in Lafayette, and he will be a seer from now on like Sookie is a hearer.
Oh, that's an excellent point.
Ooh.
That's really a good point.
I didn't think about that.
Hey, that's good.
Hey, Paco the cat.
Phyllis.
Phyllis, you got some skills.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
That is a very good point. Yeah.
She goes on to say, I think the one thing that makes the characters hard to relate to sometimes is the timeline. I think every season is maybe 1 or 2 weeks.
Yeah.
This is such a compressed time period that it's kind of unrealistic that these folks are going through all of these emotions and tragedies in such a short time.
Mm-hmm.
And when they, and then we get impatient with their inability to just get over it.
Yeah.
I hope that they space out the time frame between season 3 and season 4 to allow the characters some time to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
I want Tara and Sam together, but I also need to see Tara be less anguished. And writers, please let the girl exhale once in a while. I also would like to see her feel some real love and romance from, I hope, Sam. But if not, someone who can help her through a healing process for her mind, body, and spirit.
Yeah.
No more rough, nasty porn sex until she's healed a bit, please.
Yeah.
I love Jessica and Hoyt, but the fact that they are together again does not bode well for their continued happiness.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mama Thorntonberry is going to do something that will put either Hoyt or Jessica in mortal danger in the finale. Mm-hmm. I'd hate to see it because I love their relationship, but on this show, no one is allowed to be happy for very long.
That's the truth.
And then she puts in parentheses, Tara, lip chin quiver.
Yeah.
Love Eric and Pam for the same reasons everyone else does.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to see how Holly fits into the equation.
Yeah.
Book question. Sorry, Miss J, but Sister J, but this can also be a spoiler or speculation.
Okay.
Someone did tell me a spoiler about Holly.
Okay.
They said that in the books, the character Holly had a mother that lived in a nursing home facility, and Holly was caring for her by working several jobs. I've never read the book, so I don't know if this is true, but if it is, and they incorporate that into the show, then Holly could have a link with Jesus, and they could be working together for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus does work in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
Let me stop there.
Well,
you know what? I don't remember that in the books, but my memory is spotty, and it's been over a year since I read them.
I don't think Jesus works in, I don't think that's a nursing home. It's like a mental facility. It's like a rehab place, you know? But it's not necessarily a nursing home for, like, old people and stuff.
But if that's a true spoiler, then that could be a little connection.
That could be. Because, see, I don't know why. I mean, I don't have any factual basis, but I just have a feeling that Holly is more than just a Wiccan. You know what I mean? I just have a feeling that she's something a little deeper.
She goes on to say, Sister Speak is, and True Blood is, the bomb diggity. My daughter's new phrase for everything. P.S. Oh, yeah. I did check out Talking True Blood at Merlot's.
Okay.
Which was the podcast that we talked about.
Yes.
In our last podcast, the TTB at Merlot's. It's not a podcast for the easily offended because those ladies pick the show apart and they call out the racist, sexist, and homophobic content. They also hate Bill, but who doesn't? let me stop there. That podcast is actually pretty good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the quality is a little different than ours because they're actually taking phone calls from people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that can always get iffy. Mm-hmm. And if we ever get a chance to do a live show where we can take phone calls, ours will probably... But I felt like once I turned my sound up, I could hear it pretty well.
Really? Well, the podcast... But see, you didn't listen to the latest podcast. The podcast I listened to was the latest. And they had this caller call in named Paul. And Paul evidently was the lone phone occupier of their previous podcast. Because she mentioned that you were with us throughout the whole show, but we didn't get your name. So he said Paul. And his microphone was so loud. It was like maybe 5 volumes louder than theirs. So in order to hear them, you had to turn them up, but then he would blast you out.
Yeah.
That's annoying. But I don't, for me personally, I didn't like the podcast. First of all, I'm just a little offended by these people describing themselves as a womanist and anti-racist bloggers. You know, that's just offensive to me because for me, that says to me that I'm not included. But that's getting more political. But anyway, but that's where my mind was at when I first went to the little blog site. And then when I heard them, I thought, okay. This is not something I'm going to listen to.
I feel like I'm excluded because I really don't get what all that.
Well, see, I do.
To me.
Because.
But I think that they kind
of. I have history with that, so.
Look at things really closely and find meaning in things that I don't think really have meaning.
That's because they're not women of color.
They are women.
No, they're not. I don't believe so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yes.
I don't think so.
Yes, one of them is one of our, or one of my Twitter followers.
Oh, are they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Tammy.
Okay.
But anyway, so my thought of the podcast, I like listening to it though, because I like hearing different thoughts and perspectives though.
It was hard because of the volume stuff.
Well, I didn't hear that one. Mm-hmm. The one I heard was fine. Mm-hmm. The volume was fine. But they didn't like a lot about the show.
Yeah.
So I just didn't, I love True Blood.
Yeah.
And I felt like they were really harsh about the storyline and they didn't get some of the stories and why it was going this way. And they have read the book, so they should kind of know. But, you know, that's beside the point. The point of a podcast just like ours is mm-hmm. for you to talk about what you care about.
Right.
And what they cared about was talking about the different issues that they saw with
right.
the show. And we don't always have to like what we hear.
That's true.
It's supposed to make us think. Change our perspective a little bit. Maybe go, you know, I'll take a little piece of that and a little piece of that. And maybe that's something that I can relate to. And then let the rest go if you want to. And that's the same with ours.
I have a different perspective than you. The only reason I listen to podcasts is to be entertained. I don't want to be lectured to. I don't want somebody pointing out all the negative shit about a show that I really like. That's just not what I want to do. And like I used to listen to, oh, you got to see your face. Oh, I used to listen to.
Jay, don't even mention it.
Wait a minute.
Well, go ahead.
I used to listen to a reality podcast.
Yeah, I knew what you was going to say.
A podcast about, you know, different reality shows that we watch. And I quit listening to it for the same reason, because everything was just negative. Everything was just negative, so.
Sometimes that happens. Like today, I've been negative about this episode almost the whole podcast.
No, you haven't.
But that just was, you know, some certain things bothered me in this podcast. So sometimes, you know, listen to more than one is all I have to say. Because mm-hmm. maybe one episode, they're in a bad place that time, or something really irritated them one time.
Uh-huh.
And the next episode may not be that negative or dark. I like listening to different viewpoints, even if I don't always agree. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to keep listening. And I hope that when people listen to our show, because we've gotten emails where people didn't agree with us a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I love the fact that they can say that, get it off their chest, and then keep listening.
True.
And we can hear it, read it, take it in, and then keep on going with ourselves.
Well, true.
So that's what I like about being able to podcast and okay. tell what we want to talk
about.
Well,
anyway, why don't you post that on the on our website, or make that list or something, so other people who have not heard it, you know, they can go to that.
I never got the list from our other listener, Lori.
Well, start your own list.
But I'll start a list of the ones that I know of,
right.
and we'll go from there.
Yeah.
We'll just add on.
Yeah.
So, anyway, sorry to digress, but that's a great podcast, so everyone go listen to Talking True Blood at Merlot's. Phyllis goes on to say, we kind of got sidetracked, about Bill. She says, I agree with you ladies that the actor is doing a great job of playing him so shifty.
Mm-hmm.
I love you ladies in the podcast, Phyllis / Paco the cat. And she says, yes, I had a cat and he died. Loved him. Tear lip, chin quiver. Phyllis.
Thank you, Phyllis. We didn't mean to laugh at your Paco the Cat.
That was funny.
I mean, if y'all can see how it's spelled, it just hit us funny.
Well, for some reason, when I started to read it made me remember that voicemail. We were like, who the hell is Paco the Cat?
Okay.
Whatever. Too much for me.
Well, this has been a really digressing podcast. We done digressed.
I know.
Off into politics. We done digressed all into some other stuff.
We done went all left.
Oh, Lord.
Sorry, y'all.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what happens when we try to, when we're late and we try to cram everything into a couple of days, because we kind of go long and.
Yeah.
I know I'm kind of tired. I didn't sleep well. Had a critter in my
house. Okay, that's TMI.
What?
Anyway.
People like hearing about our lives.
Mm. Okay, are you ready to give our particulars?
Yeah. Why you don't want me to talk about my critter? Well, he wasn't my critter.
No, I gonna say.
But it was a critter in my house. And I don't like critters.
See. Mm-hmm.
So I haven't been sleeping too well for fear of the critter coming to get me in my sleep.
And that thing is not even an inch long.
I don't care. It can run and climb.
Oh,
so.
Lord.
Woo, y'all. Heaven help me. I need somebody who is good with critters and can come and help pick them up whenever I call and say, I got a critter in my house. Okay, sorry.
She talking about a baby gecko. Mm.
Oh, that thing was nasty.
It was little.
It was nasty, though. Mm-hmm. Would you want that thing running loose through your house?
Well.
Or your bedroom while you're trying to sleep?
It wouldn't bother me. Oh. Long as it didn't crawl up on the bed.
See, that's the thing. You don't know. Them things can crawl.
Okay, come on.
Okay. If you would like to send us an email to tell us how much we went off left field in this episode.
Oh, I'm sure we'll get a lot of email on that.
You will. Send it to Sister.
Okay, only thing I got to say is, wait a minute, I could sum it up in one thing for all our listeners.
Don't be ugly.
This is Sister J, and that is, don't start none, won't be done.
Sister J.
Okay.
Our email address is sisterspeak@gmail.com.
I think I'm tired.
Yeah. I know I am.
Okay.
The voicemail line is 972-692-7341. Our website is sistersinterview.com. We are both on Twitter at _SisterJ, so you can send it to her. And _SisterK, send it to me. Mm. Or we are also on Facebook at facebook.com/sisterspeakpodcast, and I will later today, or maybe tomorrow, post the different podcasts that we know of.
And post that link to the...
Oh, of the video from Myron.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll be back with a new episode next week after the finale.
Yep.
So, that's it for now. I'm Sister K.
And I'm Sister J.
See you next time.